Our third case for this morning is Dorothy Gelzer against Sheboygan County. So, Mr. Resimius, I hope I'm not butchering that too badly, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, my name is Tony Resimius. I have the privilege today of representing Dorothy Gelzer today before the court. Ms. Gelzer is a former employee of a municipality in Wisconsin by the name of Sheboygan County. She began her employment in 1986 with Sheboygan County. I won't go through her entire employment history, but would like to just give you a brief sketch. In 1988, she became the assistant to the county board chairman in Sheboygan County. She served in that capacity from 1988 to 1998. In 1998, her position title changed. Sheboygan County at that time had hired an administrative coordinator for the county to help coordinate the works of the county, and Ms. Gelzer then became the assistant to the administrative coordinator and also continued on in her duties as assistant to the county board chairman.
Now, do you concede that at the time the county makes the last reorganization that occurs here, which gives the county administrator the authority to appoint an administrative secretary and additional staff assistance as necessary, I'm reading from the Wisconsin statute, that at that point, but not before, Mr. Payne acquired the ability to terminate her?
That is correct, Your Honor. It is our position that Ms. Gelzer would have had to have been terminated prior to that by perhaps the entire county board, but certainly not just by Mr. Payne alone.
But why then? The effective date of Mr. Payne's, if you will, ascension to this new role is in August, is it not, of 2006?
The date, I believe that is correct, that it was in August of 2006. I do not have the exact date in front of me.
All right, so I'm looking at this document dated September 8, 2006, which is the termination document that everybody cites, Exhibit Q. And the termination document is not signed only by Mr. Payne. The termination document is signed by the county board chair and Mr. Payne. So what am I supposed to take from that?
Your Honor, I think that Mr. Payne in his deposition explained that that was signed not as a matter of requirement but as a matter of sort of support from the county board chairman, because the county board chairman still did supervise Ms. Gelzer in certain areas of her work. So it is our position that Mr. Payne on his own had the ability to terminate Ms. Gelzer at that time, but that the signing by both he and the county board chairman was just the manner that they decided to do the paperwork, essentially.
Okay, and just to clarify, I did not understand you to be making a separate claim that her 1.25% pay raise in 2005 rather than 1.5 was retaliation. Are you making that argument or not?
That argument is brought forth in the brief in order to point out one of the areas that Mr. Payne has showed his distaste and frustration with her use of FMLA leave. She received a lesser pay raise, in his words, because she had spent a lot of time with her mother caring for her while on family medical leave. So we bring forth that specific fact as background to help understand Mr. Payne's feeling about family medical leave.
Now, is she a one-person office on the whole and by large throughout this whole time period?
Correct. I guess you could say it's a two-person office. Her and Mr. Payne are the only ones there, which leads to much of his frustration. When she's gone, obviously the work falls onto him. As he explained in his deposition, that creates certain issues for him in his daily work.
Does the record show how long it took him to find the college intern when Ms. Gelzer leaves for her final FMLA leave?
I don't know that the record as presented in the motions indicates the exact date, but the intern was, my memory is that the intern was working there while Ms. Gelzer was there, and Ms. Gelzer actually helped train her while she was there.
Let me ask you another thing about this Payne's ability to hire a new person. You agree that he didn't have that power to hire a new person until the board upgraded the position.
Precisely.
I want to know why that doesn't support his contention. He wanted someone with more qualifications as his support person.
I think a jury could, as I said in my brief, I believe a jury could view this in either way. Either you could view it as the district court did, that Mr. Payne simply wanted to, in his words, find a greater skill set. Or
did he ever specify what skills she lacked that he thought needed to be... I know he has a deposition about talking about filing and confidentiality, but that sounds like performance as opposed to, I want you trained in Microsoft Excel and I want you... What skill sets was he looking for?
He does define skill set, if I may. It's actually in one of the briefs in the affidavit. He defines what skill set is.
That's where he's talking about things that he wants done in the office. Had he wanted to dismiss Ms. Gelzer prior to the change, what procedures would he have followed?
Well, I don't think it's particularly clear within the county ordinances, but I believe in his belief that he would have to run it by, at the very least, the personnel committee or perhaps the entire county board in order to terminate her prior to ascending to his position.
Does he testify that he has a good relationship with the county board?
That is his testimony.
So if he's right, then why is that such a big deal if she was not performing up to snuff?
Well, I think if he's right, then why would he wait until he got that power? Why not, bring it out into the light of day, explain why he would like to terminate her? Instead, she chose a completely different route. He waited till he got the power. He held a meeting with the Human Resources Director, the Human Resources Director, to outline various options for him in terms of terminating her.
Which he does, and he includes terminate outright, he includes eliminate position, change and reshuffle, raise expectations and evaluate.
Correct. Exactly right. And Mr. Payne, by the very fact that he informed the Human Resources Director, we need to have a meeting to discuss my options to terminate her, I think a reasonable inference is we can't use the reason that I would like to use. In other words, I'm frustrated with her taking family medical leave. We need to examine what reason I can use to terminate her. In the end, he chose no reason at all. He simply said, well, I am now the administrator. I have that prerogative. I'm not going to provide you a reason. Later, after all this happens, then in his deposition and affidavits, he brings out this argument that, well, she didn't have the right skill set. But there's no contemporaneous documentation that would show that Ms. Gelzer didn't have the proper skill set. To the contrary, his last performance review, less than a year prior to her termination, said she met or exceeded all expectations.
Is there any evidence that the skill set possessed by the interim college intern was higher, lower, or the same as Ms. Gelzer's?
I would say not, and in fact, because Ms. Gelzer trained her, I would suggest that, frankly, it's less than Ms. Gelzer. And in regards to the issue, another issue that I did want to raise with the court relates to the testimony of Mr. Collard, who is the Human Resources Director. Mr. Collard, although did not, he was in the meeting where the termination was decided and obviously had a role in playing in deciding the reason for the termination. In his deposition testimony, he talked about how Mr. Payne would have preferred someone who had less of a mindset of what I'm entitled to, but had rather a larger management view. Mr. Collard testified that he felt Ms. Gelzer had a union mindset, what are my rights, that sort of thing. And in fact, Mr. Collard was the one who was charged with approving or disapproving her most recent 2006 family medical leave request. That process took, I believe, in excess of 3 months, where Mr. Collard had testified normally it takes 2 to 3 weeks.
You're in your rebuttal,
Oh, I am.
Want
I apologize.
Save a minute?
I will. Thank you for pointing that out. I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Busing.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Carl Busing. I represent Sheboygan County, Wisconsin, and County Administrator Adam Payne.
I've always admired your bratwurst.
Thank you. Your Honors, I will try to address the issues that you raised in your inquiries of Mr. Rosenius.
But let me ask you to start here. I could imagine a jury finding persuasive your argument that it wasn't until Mr. Payne had the additional authority to appoint, and we'll assume for the sake of argument, also dismiss although the ordinance doesn't say that, personnel. But I could equally imagine a jury thinking that this wasn't beyond his ability at all before the administrative change. He just had to jump through a couple of extra hoops. There was every possibility that if an employee, including Ms. Gelzer, wasn't performing satisfactorily, you could go to the personnel committee and have the board dismiss them. Certainly if Ms. Gelzer had been stealing money or Ms. Gelzer had been engaged in excessive absences not related to family and medical leave, I can't believe that Mr. Payne would have supinely just said, oh, well, you know, I guess I don't have the power to hire and fire. So I find that a troublesome rationale when it just doesn't seem to hold water.
As Mr. Razemius indicated, it's somewhat unclear under the county ordinance whether he would have to run it past five members of his executive committee.
And my question is, so what? I mean, so he has to run it by the county board.
Or 34 members of the county board,
yeah,
making it a political determination at the same time that he is working toward getting himself a promotion to the county administrator position.
But you see, if an employee is performing in an unsatisfactory way, even if somebody comes to the county board and says, you know what, we just have a personality conflict, we can't get anything done, and I'm not saying that's his case, but I'm just saying that there was a process, and I can't believe that there was not a process in Sheboygan County whereby the county administrator or the administrative assistant to the county board, whatever the title was at the time, couldn't have gone to the board. So I find weak the idea that it's only at that magic moment when he gets his own promotion that he can do that.
But don't forget, the claim has never been that she has been an unsatisfactory assistant to an administrative coordinator.
But yes, it is in a way, because you also make the extremely vague claim that somehow secretly in his mind, Mr. Payne was slowly lowering his expectations of what she could do. And I found no external evidence of that. I didn't find a rewritten job description. I didn't find anything that would put some content into that statement. And again, you know, perhaps he could persuade a jury of that, but perhaps a jury might think, wow, you know, this lady had to take a lot of family medical leave because she had her own illnesses or surgeries for a while, and then her mother, and maybe he was just tired in this little tiny office of having to scramble around for college interns.
But again, I think the context must be taken in that he wanted a new administrative assistant when he got the promotion to the new position, and under those circumstances.
Decision. That's his testimony, right? And somebody has to decide, did you really want a new administrative assistant, or were you just tired of this lady who took too much FMLA leave?
Well, I think the distinction here is that there's nothing else to point to challenge the credibility determination, as the district court found.
Sure there is. There's all of her FMLA leave.
But there's never been a nexus between anything she has, any of the performance issues that he had with her, with the FMLA leave.
He says, I'm not sure that that's true, actually. I think that she, you know, whether it's filing or whether it's other things, these complaints come up when she starts to take FMLA leave.
No, the complaints come up when she wrote a letter to him complaining that she got a 0.25 less merit pay than she had in the previous year, and she complains about all the things happening and says, I'm overwhelmed, I'm overworked, and I've had time off. And he says, yes, I appreciate you recognize that you've had time off. I hope you appreciate the difficulty that has been making on our office, and therefore that's why I'm after you, to make sure that you improve your filing so that when you're not around, we can work with, around you.
But how does that square with all these good performance reviews that she got?
I suspect that it's a situation, and again, perhaps I'm arguing outside of what's in the summary judgment affidavits, but it might be like a child getting passed along through the grade school process.
Yeah, but we can't look into his underlying intent there. There's no evidence there that he said that to anybody. I'm just trying to be a kind person, and so even though she's not performing, I'm just going to kind of move her along, and I'm going to give her this increase, even though I know she doesn't deserve it, and I'm going to write good performance reviews for her generally every time.
And
I mean, that doesn't square.
And he states that his expectations have been lowered, and that's why he really is.
He says that, but that's just a way of explaining away the objective evidence of the positive performance reviews.
Mm-hmm. And there's no comment in those good performance reviews that, I mean, he doesn't make any comments. All the statements you're making, he doesn't say anything like that in the performance reviews that he does.
But all of the performance
qualifying the review, like you're trying to do.
Not in that sense, but throughout the performance reviews, he's always critiquing what she's not doing from year to year, the goals she's not making, the goals she's not attaining. Those points have been raised continuously from performance review to performance review. Regardless of whether or not he's been giving her high marks, he's always identify goals that she's not attained throughout the 6 or 7 years of performance evaluations that are included. I wanted you to appreciate the fact that as county administrator, as opposed to administrative coordinator, he was the one that was put on the line to administer the county. Instead of being in tandem with the 34 county supervisors, he was now the one that was in charge. And it was at that point that he determined, or in anticipation of getting this promotion, that he needed a skill set greater than what she could provide. And it was within the context of receiving the promotion that he wanted to clear the boards to be able to get somebody that he felt would meet the requirements that he needed to be a successful county administrator. And I think that's the distinction here, as between going back to the county board and having the county board cooperate with him in discharging her earlier. There's never been an assertion that she's been unsatisfactory as an administrative coordinator's assistant. There's never been an assertion that she was...
Listen to the contradiction. If somebody really isn't filing well, and if somebody isn't maintaining proper confidentiality, and if somebody isn't communicating well enough with others, that sounds to me like unsatisfactory performance. I mean, I don't see the difference, you know, why it's okay to have a bad filing system if you assist the administrative coordinator, but it wouldn't be okay to have a bad filing system if you're assisting the county administrator. It makes no sense to me at all.
Because that isn't the reason she was discharged. She was not discharged because she didn't have a good filing system. She was discharged because he wanted to have a better skill set, better management responsibilities deferred to her, delegated to her. That's the distinction that we have here.
Okay.
I also want to focus on the fact that Ms. Gelzer suggests that because she was given administrative leave, she was discharged on the 8th of September, but allowed to be on paid leave through November 30th, that because the job wasn't filled in the meantime, that it should have been returned to her when she completed her FMLA leave.
And I understand that argument to be at least between November 30 until the new person came in, although that's a rather time-limited frame, that at least should have been hers, since the job hadn't changed yet until the new person comes in.
But the ability of Mr. Payne to choose his own person had not changed from September 8th when he discharged her to November 30th.
Oh, there's nothing that prohibited him from choosing her. I mean, the question is, did he choose not to take her back because she was taking too much FMLA leave? That's the issue.
And I'm out of time. I'm sorry.
You may respond if you like. I'm not going to make you sit down without the last word.
I think the distinction is that he didn't intend to discharge her as FMLA retaliation in the first place, nor did he not hire her on the 30th of November because of distaste for her use of FMLA.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Razimius. You have just about a minute left.
Very good. I will be brief. In fact, I will make just one point. What Sheboygan County appears to be arguing is that in Ms. Gelser's last performance review, she met or exceeded all expectations. There, on the other hand, then they argue Mr. Payne decided he needed a better employee. They're essentially arguing he had a very good employee but thought there might be something better. That's where I think the disconnect happens, and I think that a jury needs the opportunity to decide, you know, really what the reason was that Mr. Payne terminated Ms. Gelser. So with that, that'll end my remarks. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.